And suddenly, something about as big as an apple, a light about as big as an apple, hit Chris in the stomach, a guy called Chris Mack. And it lit his stomach up. He didn't see it because as fast as it hit him, we're all watching this in this circle from different angles. It hit Pete, who's opposite him. All Chris said, I just couldn't take my eyes off. Pete's hand was glowing and his back was glowing. Now,
my God,
it was incredible. We've been up there years, Whitley. I've spent 20 years up there. We've never had anything like it ever, ever.
So were they aware of this? Did they see it?
Everybody saw it, yeah. Everybody saw it. Everybody, the seven of us saw it. All seven of us.
This is Whitley Strieber, and this is Dreamland. You have reached the edge of the world.
Welcome to Dreamland. Today, it's Halloween or nearly Halloween, and we have a Halloween show with a gentleman who enjoys things like werewolves and so forth in a very special way. Paul Sinclair is with us. He is author of the Truth Proof books. He lives in a lonely corner of the UK, and he is a documentary filmmaker, a podcaster, and just a generally cool guy, and has been on this show a number of times over the years. And I'm very happy to welcome you back, Paul.
Thank you very much, Whitley. And it's a pleasure to be back with you. And it's been a few years, but you've always been gracious to me, and I'm forever grateful. 2006, Whitley, you might not remember, but that's when we first spoke, so it's quite a long time.
Oh, I do remember very well. Yeah, you've been on my show a number of times, and it's been amazing. I mean, 2006, but gosh, we had a lot of fun and have had a lot of fun. And, you know, I've been in your neck of the woods briefly in the past couple of years, and it's a pretty lonely corner of Britain, all right. So tell us a little bit about where you are and what's it, you know, it's just a long, quiet kind of cold beaches and deep woods and things. Tell us about it.
Yeah, I'm in Bridlington in East Yorkshire. This is on the East Yorkshire coast in the United Kingdom. It's a little fishing village. There's not a lot happens here. You know, we have a town, of course, and there's other neighbouring towns, but I'm literally 200 yards from the North Sea. And do you know, initially, when we first spoke years ago, everything that I was looking into was UFO-based, UFO-related. The strange lights that the Coast Guards see and the fishermen have been looking at, and I wouldn't say documenting, but they've been observing them. They're all fully aware of them for not just decades, probably hundreds of years, but within the research, because I noted that you said he talks about the subject of werewolves, stroke dogman and Bigfoot. I'd never had an interest in any of this, Whitley, until writing the first book. And, you know, the couple of the local newspapers kindly put us articles in saying that I wanted stories of the strange and unusual. And in with these stories of UFO reports, primarily, that's what I thought I was going to be getting, came accounts of things that I never expected. A werewolf. I mean, are we real? I'm 62 years old. Am I really to believe that something like a werewolf could exist? I'd never looked into it previously, up until about 2014. You know, you've watched the films, you've heard about these things, but is there a reality to them? Well, let me tell you and your listeners, Whitley, I fully believe there's a reality to them when I've spoke to gamekeepers and people in high-powered positions and people, just manual labourers, who are all singing from the same hymn sheet, saying that they've seen these strange and unusual creatures. What they are, I suppose that's the big question. What are they? Because we don't have a huge landmass here in the United Kingdom, and I don't think it's possible that these things could go undetected if they were a bonafide flesh and blood creature. So what they are, I think it's something paranormal. It's something that manages to enter, for want of a better word, our sphere of existence on occasion. But the locations are key, Whitley, because in many instances, the locations of folklore where people have spoken about these things for hundreds of years, the same locations are still producing these sightings in present day. And I mean literally in present day, where starting a new, commencing filming for the next documentary, and my good friend, oh, apologies, thank you, cup of tea. Sorry about this, guys.
Where did that come from?
My wife just handed it me. It's not magic. My good friend Chris Turner's coming, and we've got a group. There's about eight of us, and we're interviewing witnesses. And what do they claim? They claim to have seen something that people describe as a werewolf. I mean, I'm primarily, my interests are invested in the UFO subject due to the things that happened to me in childhood, which we spoke about on one of the Dreamland shows years ago.
Years ago, but we could speak about it again because, you know, there's a lot of new people. And so, you know, why don't we sort of set the scene that way? Tell us about that. And I know that there's been another visitation very recently, too. But let's start first with what activated you, because, you know, I've been doing this show a long time and practically everybody on it has been activated in some way by a paranormal experience that they can't disbelieve and can't explain. You're included. How did this start for you?
Activated is a brilliant word to describe what happened. And obviously, as a child, you don't keep a diary. So let's assume I'm 4 or 5 years old. My dad, he's a hardworking guy, motor mechanic, but pretty brutal in his approach to childhood. I don't know whether that was his upbringing or what, but I used to have to go to bed at a certain time and I weren't allowed to get up. If I did, there'd be consequences. Now, this will make sense because on this night, unbelievably, my dad woke me up. And from my back bedroom window that overlooked the fields and the town of Mexborough, so we're now in South Yorkshire, if anybody did want to Google this place, and I'm in a little village called Old Denneby. And he's showing me next to the cooling towers of a power station about a mile and a half away, a sphere of lemon stroke white light. And as a little boy, 62 years old, I can still see it vividly. And it was spinning within itself. And he's showing me this thing, and the cooling towers weren't over 200 foot tall, and it's about 3/4 of the way up, away from them. And we watch it; it seems to drop down a little bit and travel along the rooftops of the town of Mexborough. Now, my dad used to smoke cigarettes. I can only assume that he went outside to have a cigarette and watch it from the garden. Although I don't recall seeing him from my bedroom window, but I watched this thing and I can remember watching it descend right into the next town of Swinton, and I'm straining my neck to watch it, mesmerised, little boy. But after that moment, I can't say that was a catalyst, Whitley, but after that moment, things happened. Things began to happen. And I've not got a memory from point A to the end of the alphabet. I've just got fragments of information. And the first one, I would think, and I'm in this little three-bedroomed, semi-detached council house. So there's obviously people living next door to us. And these curtains in the council house were like they were made of fiberglass. So imagine that now. It wouldn't be allowed, but they were like a metallic blue colour, blue-grey. And I woke in the night, and for some reason, and I shouldn't have been able to see because there's only pasture and cattle in the fields at the back, between our home and the town of Mexborough, and it's usually pitch black. But I can see in the room, and that's always puzzled me, how I could see, but I could see in the room. And I can see eyes in the curtains. And I think there's four sets of eyes. There are eight eyes. Little boy, I've got no reference as to draw on, apart from the cattle. And I think...
What kind of eyes?
The big black eyes, Whitley.
Those eyes. Okay, yeah,
I thought, yeah, absolutely. And I thought, I was looking at the eyes of cattle. That's the only thing I could draw that drew me. My dad would cut the lawn and he would pour the lawn clippings over into the field, and the cows would come up and stand against the fence, and they've got these big, black, lifeless eyes almost. And as a little boy, that's what I was looking at. But they were morphing in and out, and that before I realised, I can see them now, they stood at the side of the bed, which is another impossibility because the bed was at the side of the wall. And yet they're either side of me. But as a child, you don't realise that at the time. It's only when you're digesting it as an adult. So they're there. Then the memory just jumps to me crying and feeling helpless. And that's where that one ended. And then it was a catalogue of those types of events right up until the age of about 14 when it stopped. So, you know, there's more what I've called cameos of events that are in Night People, the book that I wrote about these experiences. 14, it seemed to stop. And I'd get a job as a joiner, carpenter, do your thing. You sort of end up going out, enjoying good times with your friends. I met my wife, Mary, who I'm still with today. And we've been married over 40 years. She'll kill me if she knew. I can't remember. But it's over 40 years, 43 years. And I never told Mary about any of these things. And back in 1993, we moved to Bridlington, this little seaside town that I'm in now. And we bought this huge Victorian house. And when I say huge, you know, six big bedrooms, a monstrous mahogany staircase that went up and around over four floors. And we're in this property. And Whitley, I don't know what your listeners think or what you think, but it's almost as though our lives are mapped out for us, because it didn't start a month into living there. It started instantly. When we bought this property and I was travelling up there with our eldest daughter to get it habitable because it was in a bit of a state. When we bought this property, Whitley, the things began. The noises, the strange things in the house were happening. One evening, and I know I discussed this with you once before, and the staircase had lovely, beautiful mahogany spindles, you know, the turned stair rods and the handrails. And I'm laid in this bedroom at the top of the house on a mattress, and my eldest daughter's at the side of me. We'd been working on this property. I'd employed a plumber to get some hot water onto the property, and we were going to go home the next morning. And I woke in the night, and I'm laid, obviously, I'm only about 8 inches off the floor on the mattress. Sarah's fast asleep at the side of me, and I'm looking out onto the landing. And it's light. I can see light coming up, and this landing is huge. It's like 5 metres by 4 metres, and you can look down to the bottom with all the staircase. And there's light lifting. It's glowing as it's coming up. And suddenly the spindles, the wooden spindles of the staircase, looked like fluorescent tubes. And then everything exploded and it was daylight. The next thing I remember, it was daylight. I'd forgotten all about it. So, and Sarah wakes up. She says, you know, what we're doing today. Dad says, well, we'll finish these few jobs off, Sarah. Then we go home to your mum and your sisters. That's what we're going to do. And I sort of stretched my arms out, and they're just peppered in holes. These hadn't scarred. The scars came afterwards, as in the other visitations. But they were peppered in holes. If you imagine a match head and then putting it in when it's hot, there was lots of them. And then as soon as I saw that...
On your body?
All over my arms, yeah. On my
arms. On your arms?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the scars are permanent now, what happened afterwards, and on my back. And... I remembered, I'd only got fragments. And when I wrote Night People, I thought more things were going to flood back, as in the intense thinking of trying to revive these memories. But the only thing throughout writing the entire book from childhood to present day, well, it's about 3 years old, the book, I remembered that when this light came up from the landing, there were figures in the light. Didn't remember that at the time. And it's not a contrived memory, because there must be 40 or 50 events that I remember from childhood to present day, and there's only two things that I remembered a little bit more of in the book. And but the strange thing is, and I'm not deeply religious, Whitley, but it almost looked biblical. It looked, everything had a luster to it. As they rose, it looked like a nativity scene almost. There was rich hues of gold and reds and blues. And then the light came and it exploded and it was morning. After that, we had lots of things happening. I eventually started.
Well, wait a minute. Let's back up here a minute. I want to, you know, your father made the decision to wake you up and show you that light. And now, not every father, it would not have occurred to every father. And it reminds me a lot of the mystery of my own father, who took me out to the country house to meet the visitors a number of times, which I've reported in various books. And yet we never spoke of it. But when I was a child, Edward Conroy, who wrote a book about me called Report on Communion, found out that all of the neighbors remembered that I was constantly talking about being taken by the spacemen. In other words, I wasn't silent about it, but it was never spoken of at home, as far as I remember. What about your father? Did you ever speak of it, or do you know anything about why he may have been there at all? Oh, before you answer, we're taking a brief break. So, folks, we'll be right back. We're talking to Paul Sinclair. His Truth Proof books are incredible. You can find his work on Amazon. What else can we find, Paul? Can we get to any of your documentaries? Do you have a website? I'm pretty sure you do.
I do, Whitley. Yes, it's truthproof.uk. And the paperback copies of the books are available on the website. The Kindle versions are available on Amazon. The documentary Wolflands, which I made with a guy called Les Drake, and we're really proud of it. It's been received so well from people within the cryptid community, such as Ron Moorhead, who you'll be familiar with, and Daryl Denton, people who've got, I would say, big names, but we're all equal, but they carry some weight within the community. So let me get back to it. Wolflands can be found on Amazon Prime. And it can also be obtained if you wanted an hard copy of the DVD through truthproof.uk. And I run the Truth Proof YouTube channel where we interview various guests. And I think I spoke to you myself on there. Well, I know I have.
You have. Yes, exactly. Okay. Now, let's get back to your dad. And is there anything there that would explain, A, why that showed up, and B, his actions?
That's, you know something? It's a great question because nobody's ever asked me that, ever. And I've never thought about it. My dad was quite a hard man. And when I say hard, he would smack first and ask questions later. And so I rarely went into any detail with anything with him. He only softened in later life. So there was no, I think you gathered it. That's why you asked the question. There was no rhyme or reason why he would wake me up. Also, no rhyme or reason why he would leave me looking at that object on my own, which he did. He disappeared, and I ended up looking at it and watching it descend towards the town of Swinton. So that is a good point. And just to jump away from it slightly, but you just draw me wherever you want, Whitley. He, at the end of his life, in 2000, towards the end of his life, well, it was, he had a very bad illness. I used to visit him every day in hospital. Straight from work, I would go. Even if I spent 15 minutes or an hour and a half, I was there. And he was in a room on his own. And I went this time. He could hardly breathe. He'd got an illness called bronchial ecstasis. And he required oxygen constantly. And in between odd words, he would take the mask off and speak. And I got there and my mum said, he wants to speak to you. Your dad wants to speak to you on your own. I said, really? She said, yeah, which was unusual because they were quite inseparable. So she's outside and I went in and I said, everything okay? You want to speak to me? And it was a struggle to talk. And he took his mask off and I'll not do the actions, but basically he said, the aliens visited me last night, which I've documented in the Night People. And now, if I were lying, that's a terrible thing to do, to bring your father into it.
You're not lying.
It's the truth, you know? It's my truth, but it's the truth.
Anyone who says you're lying is working probably for the government.
Because
you're not lying.
No, it's the truth. I swear on my children's lives. And you know, that we've no validity for that from my dad even, but he's ill. And he said, they visited me last night. I said, what do you mean? He said, in this room. And there's pauses in between this, but I don't need to deliver it like that. And he said, two of them visited him. He says, they spoke to me. I said, what did they speak to you about? And he said, he didn't know or he couldn't remember. He said, but they arrived via a swirling type of hole. and he could see Downey, and they wanted him to come with him, with them. That's what he said, but he didn't. It wasn't. He didn't describe it as the spiritual thing that we see, where people describe, which is probably equally as true. It's just people's interpretation. He said aliens. He said, and they wanted me to go with them. And I found that really interesting, because there was massive gaps, Whitley, in what happened in childhood to his later life, where we never talked about any of this. And I dearly wish that I had have spoken to my, not just my dad, my mum as well, to find out the extent of what they thought was happening, you know, and what was responsible. Because, well, my wife knows now. I mean, she's had experiences. I don't know whether that's in part being married to me, but even the girls, the four girls, they've all seen and experienced things sometimes that they wish they hadn't. But jumping back to my dad, to the early years, why he drew me to, woke me to look at that again, the Mexborough Power Station is beyond me. And I would have thought that would have been about 1966, 1967. And, you know, many things, many, many things happened in between that times. But it stopped at 14, began again at 93 when we moved here. And it stopped 97, 98. And in 1997, if you want me to continue with this, Whitley, in 1997, can't remember the exact month, me and my wife had been out, enjoyed a few, working all week, enjoyed a few beers and something to eat. Our eldest daughter, Sarah, were old enough to look after the girls. We come home and go to bed. We're in the back bedroom and I wake in the night and there's something wrong. And I kind of know. And every time it happened in childhood, I were always going to be ready for them. Every time it happened from 1993 to 1998, well, we're talking 7 here, but 98, I were always going to be ready for them, but I never was. It was done and over, and I were caught in the moment before. It was after the event that I realised what were happening, if that makes sense. And I'm laid there, and I see lights moving on the wall in front of me, the windows behind me. And I know, and I just know, but I'm kind of rabbit in headlights, I'm fixed. Mary's in bed outside of me, and I know, and then I can't move, and then they're outside of me again, but they can't be, because Mary's in bed, my wife, Mary's in bed outside of me. How can they be outside of me? I've always had the idea that I was in bed and they'd never take me anywhere, but another part of me says I've got to have gone somewhere, otherwise how is this working? And they're speaking to me. Now, I've got no knowledge really in childhood of being spoken to by these beings. No mind speak or audible hearing, but they're in my head, and I'm in pain. I'm in real bad pain, and they're telling me that it's a spring from the bed that's turning in my back. And Whitley, obviously the bed's quite good. There's no springs protruding.
Right.
That's what they're telling me, and it's I'm terrified, and I can't move, and I know I'm crying. And the next thing, I believe I must have passed out in pain. And the next thing I know, it's morning. This is interesting. There's a little side story to this. I wake up because someone's knocking at the door. Well, anybody who knows me, they know that I get up at silly o'clock, Whitley. I get up at 4:30 in the morning. I always have been an extremely early riser, but it's about 7:30. And there's someone knocking at the door, and one of our daughters, I think it was Jessica, went to the door, and I can hear her talking to someone. And this neighbour's come to see her, which will make sense in a moment. So that was that. And I'm not up, and I don't understand why I've not got up, and I've no memory of the night before at like this moment. So I get up and I sit on the edge of the bed. I've no clothes on. Obviously the bedroom door's shut. There's only me and my wife in, and I'm sat there. And there's light. There's the lights that I saw on the wall couldn't have come from anywhere, because there's no lights at the back of us. We had the curtains open. There's nothing that could have put them lights in. And Mary goes, "Oh my God, Paul, I don't believe it. You've got three holes in your back." Whitley, these weren't little matchstock holes. There's a pen here. You could have put the pen in them, in two of them. And as soon as she said it, I saw the lights on the walls. I saw the beings at the side of me. I can't remember anymore. than what I've just told you guys. I can hear being spoken to and being told that it's a bed spring. And I know all that. I can feel that searing pain. It went really deep into my body. So she took a picture with one of those cameras that you just sort of press and it spits a picture out. Luckily, she did. From there, I went up to the hospital. The doctor looked at my back and looked at the wounds, and he insisted that someone must have done this to me. It was absolutely certain that someone had inflicted these wounds on my body, to the point where he was talking to me and telling me that, Paul, you can talk to me. You couldn't have done this yourself. It's literally in a place I couldn't even touch them, really. I think I could just get, probably back in the day when I were in my 30s, I probably could have reached round and touched them. But I went and had a biopsy, and there was evidence of giant foreign body cells that were forming. And I've got all the medical notes, and most of them are in Night People. Most of the excerpts from the medical notes are in Night People. And it talks about, I didn't know any of this, really. I'd been going to the doctors on and off with punch hole lesions, which the doctors knew nothing about they'd got no answer for. They'd consulted senior dermatologists and skin specialists, which I found all this out when I looked at the medical notes when they came to me. And terminology like, we would like your opinion on this young man's skin condition, where punch hole lesions seem to be appearing on his body. Well, not seem, are appearing on his body every 3 to 6 months. I knew what was doing it. But I didn't tell them. The doctor in the hospital telling me that somebody's...
Yeah, you can't. I've been in that situation too. You can't tell them. There was a doctor who does know about this, who wanted a CT scan of the implant in my ear, and I had a devil of a time convincing my GP to get it. What? He said. And finally I said, look, this doctor is going to call you and talk to you. And after that, I suddenly get this call from his office. Whitley, the CT scan's all ready. All you have to do is go over there. They're ready for you right now. And they were all very excited. So that the doctor who's name must not be mentioned, largely because it pisses him off so much. I call him the CIA doctor because that's what he is or was. He's retired now. Anyway, he got his CAT scan, and I've got a copy of it, and I've shown it many times. But in any case, they don't know what the heck any of this is the point. They don't know anything about it. So, but go ahead. And now you have these marks still on your body, I presume.
Oh, yeah, the one I talked about, the ones in the early 90s, 1993, pepper in my arms, which happened several times, three or four times, and they healed. But then when we get towards late 96 to 1998, then it became more intense. And then I were left with holes, proper holes that have... There's a name for the scarring. I can't think what they call it, but there's a name for it. And the bumps, the white bumps that they've healed in. And as I say, I have put some of the pictures in the book. But how things have changed, Whitley, because I've got friends now who are doctors who will openly talk about this and discuss it as though we know there's a phenomena taking place, something highly unusual that's not of this world or not of the world that most of us live in, most of the populace. But back then, the doctors, they wouldn't consider it. There's a movement in the UK called Unhidden, and I believe they spoke with Ross Coulthard just a few months ago, and about the abduction scenario and the way people were perceived. If they'd say they'd got some kind of mental illness, if I'd have started speaking about what I said I saw at the side of my bed that night when I was stood in the hospital. But now they're trying to push forward. These are proper medical professionals and doctors. They're actually using Night People as an example. So I think there is a movement. I mean, whether we'll see any real lifting of this veil in my lifetime, I don't know. But it's a step in the right direction anyway.
Well, we're all hoping to go more in that direction. It's going to take time, though, before the general, especially the medical profession, realizes that we're here and we need them. And we also need to know what is being done to us. Like, there's no effort made to ever understand what in the world is leaving these holes in you. And it would be nice if we did know. And for example, I had one of my cats was killed by a bursting plasma in our living room. And what, you know, she got cancer of the eyes overnight and died a few days later, had to be put down because she was in such pain. Poor little gal. And, you know, we deserve more. Let me put it that way. And speaking of more, folks, here's more from unknowncountry.com. Subscribe today. We'll be right back. We're talking to Paul Sinclair. His book, Truth Proof, The Night People. His website is truthproof.co.uk. And is that correct?
Truthproof.uk, Whitley.
Oh, just .uk. Truthproof.uk. You can find him on YouTube and the Truthproof channel. And now let's move on to the present. We have explored the past. You're a very extraordinary man full of holes, but still extraordinary. And perhaps for that reason. And you mentioned a visitation quite recently. Why don't we sort of start with, get into the modern material with that?
Okay. Right. So during the making of the documentary and gathering of other people's reports, I spend a lot of time in what we call the research area, Whitley. And a lot of it's on the clifftops of a place called Bempton, about 4 miles from my home. I mean, it sounds convenient, but everything seems like almost a perfect symmetry. Like I said earlier, it started right away when we moved here. But there's a group of people go up there, and we try to be quite analytical and scientific in our approach. We've got a large array of cameras. We don't just stand mouths open looking at satellites and thinking we're seeing UFOs from some other star system. Now, originally, years ago when we were up there, the phenomena appears to have morphed, and we'd be looking at these orange spheres of light, and you'd see one appear from nowhere. Literally just doesn't fly in from anywhere and then just punch into a multiple of four or five different things. Then you'd see lights in the grass. And it's almost, I don't know whether our awareness to it is, the more that we're becoming attuned to it, the closer it's becoming and the bolder it's becoming, because we've seen everything up there. And as one part of the phenomena, I wouldn't say dies away, but kind of tapers off, something else is taking its place. And I realize how crazy that sounds, but I urge people to just Google the area of Bempton and look at on the channel and look at what, or the YouTube channel, and look at what we're actually finding and filming. I hope we've timed. I can tell you about the phone call as well, but the visitation, that's what we've called it. So previously we've looked at lights in the sky. We've looked at a huge sphere of orange light, which I saw with a guy called Lee Haywood. Lee said the influence the light was giving off was as big as a Volkswagen Beetle. And he's not wrong. And that were about 80 yards away from us, just off the ground or on the ground behind us. Because Lee's talking to me, I'm setting a camera up, looking out to sea, and I turn around and it's there, I tell him. And as fast as I'm pulling the camera around, Whitley, this thing's dissipating and it's gone. And that's the truth of it. So we've seen all that type of thing. Now, about 3 weeks ago, there was eight of us on the clifftops. All seven, because I was there were seven of us. I was one of the seven. They all saw this. So this Mark came a little bit later. I'll do a breakdown. You stop me if I'm boring people with this. But as we're all talking and we're not all spread apart, we're all in a kind of circle on this platform that's on the edge of 300-foot cliffs, sheer cliffs, looking out to sea. There's a fence around it, so we're not going to just tumble off. And I look as I speak to Mark, and a light appears on the deck, on the floor near him. And I highlight it, not casually. I'm quite animated. Anybody see it? No, no one saw it. That's fine. So we're there 10 minutes later, and suddenly something about as big as an apple, a light about as big as an apple, hit Chris in the stomach, a guy called Chris Mack. And it lit his stomach up. He didn't see it because as fast as it hit him, we're all watching this in this circle from different angles. It hit Pete, who's opposite him. All Chris said, I just couldn't take my eyes off. Pete's hand was glowing and his back was glowing. Now,
my God,
it was incredible. We've been up there years, Whitley. I've spent 20 years up there. We've never had anything like it ever. Ever.
So were they aware of this? Did they see it?
Everybody saw it, yeah. Everybody saw it. Everybody, the seven of us saw it. All seven of us. Nobody, it's not the power of suggestion, this, guys. Whoever's listening to this, if you're rolling your eyes, please don't. This happened. And we all saw it, all with the same intensity, all from different angles. And when I'm looking at Chris Mack, I can't take my eyes off his stomach area, which is lit up. And he never saw that because he's looking at Pete and he says Pete's hand was glowing. Ian Linford, Linny, who came on the live stream, my live stream, and a few of the others, we were all raving about this because it were incredible. So it did this ping pong ball thing and disappeared. I put a camera on and I'd gauge people's reaction, hoping as well as a little psionics camera that we might be able to get another replay of this. I think I had it on for 19 minutes and turned it off. It did it again. It did it three times.
When the camera was off.
But only when the camera was off.
Listen, I've been there and done that. It's incredibly frustrating. Yes, I understand. Go ahead.
No, I know you. I know, and I know why you put the camera on. I know with that. I'll say myself here, not necessarily you. We're that desperate to try and validate what we're telling people, what we're imparting to people. I want people to share in and actually think this guy's on the level. This guy's telling the truth. Because 62-year-old, am I quite excited that this happened? You bet I am. It felt good. Everything in childhood was terrifying. Everything that happened from 93 to 98 was very frightening. As a man, it was frightening. This felt good. We all felt elated. We all felt like we'd been touched by something that was almost spiritual. It was wonderful. So so that happened. That's about 3 weeks ago, Whitley. We've been trying upon trying to think and replicate, because we meditate, we'll sit and we'll go into like very quiet state and try and clear our mind of everything and hope that something might happen. We can't think what ingredients, and you might say probably no ingredients, Paul, it decided to visit. I don't know, but I can't think why that happened. We didn't seem to do anything different. I don't know what your views are, but it was a fabulous experience.
And that is really one of the extraordinary experiences I've ever heard, because you're talking about seven people witnessing this simultaneously, and that is just remarkable. And let me ask you this: the two people who had the glowing material, did either of them see it on themselves? The man whose hand was glowing, for example,
Pete could see the glow. He could see all the light. It lit the decking up. He couldn't see it on himself. He sort of stood, and his hand's glowing, his back's glowing. I felt quite emotional because Pete's not been very well. And I almost felt it had come to visit Pete. It sounds a bit, I don't know what it sounds like, but I hoped it had. Let's put it that way. Chris Mack never saw it on his stomach. You're really insightful, Whitley. And I'm not just trying to make you feel good, but nobody's asked that question either. None of us saw it on ourselves. Because you heard me say, Chris Mack, I couldn't take my eyes off Chris, and Chris didn't see it because he's looking at Pete. Pete didn't see it. I think he saw it on Linny, Ian Linford.
That's the way it goes, isn't it? Years ago, back in 2012, I was on a show run by a man named Mark Sims. And we discovered, or Mark's wife actually discovered recently, and this video is up on on this channel, on my channel, by the way, folks, if you want to look at it, it's a few weeks old. My face is slowly covered by this white material that it completely covers my face, and then I make a move and it just disappears. I never was aware of it at all. And she just noticed it recently, although when the thing was run live, people must have noticed it. Right after that, Mark got busy with other things and doesn't have any records of anyone sending him emails or texts or anything about it, but they must have. And you have to ask yourself, what in the world is this stuff? I mean, what are these lights glowing on you? What is this white material that completely covered my face? It's just so strange.
Do you think, Whitley, that maybe, I mean, you know, there's a high intelligence to certain parts of what's interacting with us and what's affecting us. But do you think some of it could, it is actually trying to communicate? I mean, if you're on a podcast or radio show, not radio, because you're actually on screen, and your face almost transforms, or this white substance appears to come over you, do you think that's not necessarily just for you? It's some kind of validation. I don't know.
I'm talking about disclosure in a completely unique way, and you know, I'll rerun this at the end of the show, folks, so everyone can see it, and it's not just going to be for subscribers. It'll be for everyone. But I do urge you to subscribe to unknowncountry.com, please. And we're going to take our final break right now. And while we're running commercials that you've probably already seen, why don't you go to unknowncountry.com and click on the subscribe tab and get started. It's $5 a month. It's not expensive. We'll be right back. We're talking to Paul Sinclair. Paul, can you tell us again a little bit about your website, your YouTube channel, and so forth?
I can do, Whitley. Thank you very much for giving me the opportunity. Yeah, the website is truthproof.uk. Loads of first-hand original reports of UFOs and other strange phenomena on there that you won't find anywhere else in the world. Feel free to use them if you're looking at it. Just give Truth Proof a little bit of credit for taking them if you do use them. That's to anybody. I'm quite happy to do that, but just give us a bit of credit. The books are available on Amazon as a Kindle download or on truthproof.uk. As you know, you just purchase the book and I will send it out, just as we do with the hard copy of the Wolflands DVD, which incidentally, and this is going to sound like a boast, I think that's one of the best cryptid-related films that's ever been made. I know you're a good friend with Morton Howe.
I have to add, folks, I have watched it a couple times. It's just wonderful. It's really good. Wolflands is wow. And we're going to get into wolves and werewolves right now, in fact, because this is one of the most interesting that, you know, the UK is, Paul said earlier, is not a big place. It's an island, and you know, it's big enough to where when you're deep inside it, it feels like a pretty big place. But it has got to be one of the most intricate places on the planet, because you go 2 miles and you've gone from one world to another world. And there are areas in that country that are so fantastically isolated. And I'm not talking about Scotland, and I'm talking about where Paul is in Yorkshire. It is, there's wilderness, absolute wilderness there. It's amazing, wonderful. But so tell us now, set the scene a little bit. Let's talk in general about cryptids in your area.
Cryptids in our area, and well, they literally do go back hundreds of years, right to probably the earliest werewolf accounts not, I wouldn't say in the world, because we know that there are cryptid accounts that go back thousands of years equally as interesting, but we've got the accounts of the Flixton Werewolf, which is a little village on about 10 miles from where I live, where there's an archaeological site called Flixton Star Car, where the archaeologists of the day, not Paul Sinclair wanting to turn this into some kind of werewolf phenomena, deemed that the people who were living and working the cars, and these aren't motor cars, people, this is wetlands. It's just a name for reeds and wetlands that call it the cars, C-A-R-R-S. These ancient peoples, they were probably shaman practicing ritualistic magic and sacrifice. And what are we getting from this shamanic land here in the UK? We're getting reports that stem through time of this beast, this bipedal fur-covered beast, and we're still getting it in present day. When I've got reports, Whitley, that go on the cars, on the Flixton and Fulton cars, right back to the 1930s. They go back beyond that, but I'm talking about people who've got living memory of seeing this, an old elderly farmer who lived at a place called Ganton. And this guy claimed that he'd seen this thing three or four times in his lifetime. I mean, if it's living there, as you've just discussed, we have got wilderness, we have got areas. I'm very close to the North Yorkshire Moors National Park, which is 525 miles of forest, farmland and woodland. So there's a lot of area, but I still don't believe that we've got some undetected mammal that's managed to evade everything for hundreds of years. That these things are a little bit like Skinwalker Ranch, if we want to go with that romance, with that notion. Yeah, they're slipping through.
Are the many Bigfoot sightings here where it's quite clear that Bigfoot is not of this world? It can enter this world and can wander this world, but this isn't where it... You know, I've thought something about something with these cryptid animals. Perhaps it is a natural ability to move between parallel universes that has evolved as a defense mechanism. Because I have myself experienced that, which my listeners know about. I went to the Lakota Sioux Pine Ridge Reservation in 2017 and experienced there for 3 days. Whenever I closed my eyes, day or night, I saw another parallel version of the same world in incredible total detail. And then when I came back here, I popped into it physically a couple of times. Now, what if an animal evolves the ability to just do that? And we see them as cryptids because they come from the other world, perhaps when they feel threatened there, or they come here to hunt or for some other reason. I think to myself about the werewolves that have been encountered in your area, and I think about coming to hunt, and I think, uh-oh. So yeah, tell us more.
Well, no, absolutely, and you're echoing thoughts that I've had as well. What if they've just got this, what if their ability is to slip between worlds, slip from their sphere of existence? And I totally agree, and we've got all, you're absolutely on the money when you say that these things, I would have thought the werewolf stroke dogman phenomenon is no different to the Bigfoot. As in, there's so many attributes that set them apart from a flesh and blood normal animal, such as a bear. The witness will often describe these things as floating, as though they're on a conveyor belt. They're moving very fast, but there's no real movement to what they're doing, as in the exertion that you would see. The self-illuminating eyes. You know, when we made Wolflands, I spoke to three, well, there was three of them, but I spoke to two guys who went to a forest in North Yorkshire called Broxa Forest. Incidentally, Broxa in Portuguese means, come on, let's get this right, it's shapeshifter or something of that nature, which is a strange terminology for a forest in the UK. I'll think of the exact wording, but I've not bent it out of shape there by using that terminology. But they're in a ravine, they're in an 800-foot ravine. And they've got down into this ravine. They've not gone looking for cryptids. There's a river that runs in the bottom of the ravine called the River Derwent. and they'd work hard all week, and they'd simply gone to do a bit of wild camping, take some burgers or steaks and sit and have a couple of days just in the wilds. First night they were there, the witness that didn't talk, and there's a good reason, and I've always kept his name out of it, he knew that it was there. He said, we've got to go. They're in. It's got dark. It's 800 foot. It's very steep. They couldn't have got out in the night without a lot of effort. And he said, what do you mean? So Jim said, what do you mean we've got to go? He said, there's something watching us. He says, and I thought, well, we're in the middle of nowhere. And Steve's saying the same. He says, no, there's something watching us. So he'd perceived this animal, this creature, whatever you call it, had put a feeling on this man, or this man was intuitive. Whatever the ingredients, he'd perceived it. So as it gets to around midnight, and they sat around this fire, and the guy who's not named said, what's that over there? Now, in Wolflands, I've measured this with surveyor's tape. It's about 40 feet away. And he said, Jim said, at about 3 foot off the ground, there's a pair of huge human-shaped amber eyes. He said, but they're very wide set apart. He says, and I didn't know. His exact words were, I couldn't think of an animal to assign those eyes to. Plus the fact there's no light on them. These are self-illuminating, bioluminescence. What have we got in UK that can do that? So they're looking at them. And all the time, their friend is getting more and more nervous. He says, and he said he's a big fella. He says, and we thought you were going to go running off into the darkness. You're in the middle of nowhere. You're in a forest. When you're walking through these forests, you could be in any part of the world. They're just the big pine trees, you know. And we're sort of keeping him calm. And he's getting more and more nervous. And these eyes haven't moved. He says, in the end, he said, I stood up, stepped a few paces towards it and made a few hissing and shooing sounds. He said, and it disappeared. He said, and then I turned to Steve and the other guy, and the mouths have dropped, their eyes are wide. He says, and when I look back, it's from being 3 foot in the air, it's now 7 foot in the air, these eyes. And they can see its outline. And yeah, absolutely. And he claimed it watched them all night. It watched them until Steve came out with a really good, I'm still in touch with him. And he's so full of thanks because, I mean, it affected Jim so much that he needed counselling. They were terrified. They thought that their lives were going to end. They said, at first we thought it were growling at us, and then we realised it was its breathing. So there's a physical presence there, Whitley, regardless of where they come from. He said, and Steve said, that fear, this is what I found fascinating. He said, that fear that I felt, he said, and I've been in some airy situations in my life, scary situations. I've never, ever felt fear like it ever in my life. He said, and that fear wasn't mine. He said, it put the fear on me. He said, and I got as I daren't look at it. He says, and I just, he says, and every time I looked, it put more fear on me. He said, so I don't know what the mechanisms were involved there and why it would be like that. But that's just in the forest of the Broxah Forest. And do you know, we've got very close to Broxah Forest, we've got a location called East Ayton, which is a little village. And if you go back in time, go back 130 years, there was a guy writing things back then, similar to what, not what you're writing. I know it's more alien related, not cryptid, but he's writing about the Barghest of East Ayton, a huge fur-covered beast with huge glowing red eyes. And he's writing about it on the edge of the north, on the edge of the Forge Valley, the North Yorkshire Moors. It's the same thing. These things have transitioned time, and the locations are key, I think, Whitley. We know things are seen in all places, and you know, nothing can be taken for granted and saying, oh, these things only show up here or in that location, because people often report seeing UFOs or having strange experiences. But for the most part, you get areas, as you know, as well as I do, that produce a large amount of unexplained phenomena. And I'll tell you what I find fascinating, Whitley, the parallels to the Bigfoot, with certain parts of what I would call the exotic science. And what do I mean by that? So the alien abduction scenario, Paul Sinclair's laid there paralyzed, in pain, and these beings are talking to me in here. The spiritual medium, clairaudience, they're receiving audible messages inside their head. I'm not saying that that is connected to the alien, but it's the same science that's being used, in my opinion. The Bigfoot scenario. So you've got the guy who's walked the woodlands and forests of America 30 years and never seen anything like it. And it's a load of rubbish in his head until one steps out onto the path and he raises his gun and a voice inside him from somewhere, from this thing, we presume, speaks to him and tells him not to do it. So there's parallels throughout the unexplained that sort of weave it all together that some researchers aren't looking for, because it's such a shame that people want to pigeonhole their particular niche, their particular genre of the phenomena, when everything ultimately, we might not know how, has a little bit of its threads running through them all. And the voice phenomena, the mind speak, is one such phenomena.
Exactly. And we just, I think we are part of a much larger world, that for whatever reason, we're on a certain frequency, but this world's got lots and lots of different frequencies. It's not just one. And for whatever reason, the area where you live is an area where the frequencies will mix somehow. It's not unlike the Skinwalker Ranch in that respect, or the area up in my old cabin in upstate New York. Now, near the cabin, there's a really unique formation, geologic formation. Under the mountains that are immediately behind the cabin, there's a huge seam of iron. It's really huge. It goes from around Pine Ridge, New York, north all the way to Woodstock, New York. And in it, it's so huge that the Iron Mountain Records Facility is there. And there are entrances to that records facility in the town of Rosendale, New York, and in the town of Woodstock, New York. And the banks and the government and so forth all keep records in this thing, and it's all drilled out. Now, where I live, or lived, I should say, the little gray people would come out of that iron seam, and we could hear them drilling under the house, and they live in there. And so the northern part of it is on the Iron Mountain facility. The southern part of it appears to belong to the grays. And I'm telling you all this to ask you, is there any kind of unusual formation in, not necessarily iron, because in Texas, where I grew up, the formation that's riddled with these same tunnels is all limestone. So under our country house, where the visitors came to me and to an aunt and an uncle for years, they came out of these limestone caves that are under the house. In fact, when the house was first purchased, or first built, I should say, it's on a bluff, and it overlooks a river. It's a beautiful place. But for unknown reasons, my great-grandfather had the whole front of the bluff dynamited in order to close up cave entrances that were there. I guess he was afraid the children might get into them, but there could have also been something else going on, because there's a little draw down on the property where a lot of strange things have happened. How about your area in terms of geology?
Geology, we're composed of limestone and chalk, primarily, lots of it, and cave systems, which we can't get to, because you heard me say the areas where I'm doing the research, the cliffs are from 200 to 420 feet at their tallest, and they're sheer. There's usually water below those cliffs all year round, but if you travelled on a boat and looked to the cliffs, it's just riddled with caves, absolutely riddled with cave systems. So it's also on what's called the Bempton Fault. So that, as in geological terms. And then where I wouldn't say exactly where we stood, but around the area where we do a lot of the research, if you went out 70 miles, you would be at the bottom of Doggerland, which was the land bridge between the UK and Europe. You know, a lot of your listeners will have heard of Doggerland, and a lot of the fishermen, when they're trawling that area, trawl up mammoth tusks and artifacts from ancient times. And it's only in the last 3 weeks, I've known about this for years, and I don't mean I'm unique, a lot of people have. One of the largest impact craters is literally about 50 miles out from there as well. It's called the Silver Pit Crater, which is interesting. And there's lots and lots of things. We've seen lights beneath the surface of the sea, managed to film them as well. And if any of your listeners say, well, he's talking about this, we've never seen them, look on the live streams, you will find these things. And you know, because we've actually put the footage on. And yeah, so there are some unusual anomalies, and the composition of the land, like you said, there's a lot of running water as well, not just from the sea, actually into the sea. So there'll be vast cave systems underneath, and it's not imaginary. There will be, and there are. I mean, you can see some of the church cave. There's some huge caves which people can Google and look at all around this area I'm talking about, of the peninsula of Flamborough and Bempton. Incidentally, and the other area where we'll be doing lots of filming this weekend throughout October, we'll be going in a place called Danes Dyke. And it's a 2.5 mile Neolithic earthwork that ranges from about 25 feet to 40 foot. So we're in thousands of years, and men dug this with bone and antler tools. For what reason? And it cuts 2.5 miles. It cuts across the land, cutting this area where we research off from the mainland. You know, there's a road cut through it now and into the beauty spot known as Danes Dyke, the little nature reserve. There's a road cut through it there. And I did a short for the YouTube channel only last week, because the penny didn't drop. The light bulb moment didn't come on for me until a few weeks ago. I've got three reports from October near the road. These are the intersections. These are the places where people have cut into the dike to form roads, disturbing the earthwork. So there's four reports that we're going to cover over the course of this week. There's three of them near the main road, and then there's the road out of the nature reserve where they've cut into it as well, which is unusual. Are we seeing these things because of the disturbances in the earthwork? I mean, it's not a new disturbance. This road's been in 50, 60 years. But comparatively, when you're talking about an earthworks that's 3,000 to 4,000 years old, it's new. It's in its infancy.
Yeah,
and that's
I understand.
Where these things are being seen. So it's fascinating. So, yeah, I think the composition, the geology, I think it all plays a part. I really do, Willie.
The shadows of another world creeping into this world through these strange places, and Paul has ended up right in the middle of one. He was chosen as a child to do what he does, I'm sure. That's what that experience was at the very beginning. It's been a wonderful experience, too, talking to you again. It's been a couple of years and too long. So don't miss his live channel, the Truth Proof YouTube channel, his books, and his website, truthproof.uk. There's so much going on. Paul has got a lot going on. Plus, the Wolflands documentary is well worth your time. I really enjoyed it personally. So do all of these things. And I'd like to thank you for being with us, Paul. Now what I'm going to do is I'm going to rerun this strange video of the white stuff appearing on me. Yeah, some of you have seen it, and if you've seen it, there's no point in continuing to watch. But if you haven't, take a look and also listen carefully to what's being said, because I think that the white stuff that appears on me is there to emphasize and bring forth what I'm saying in the video. And I believe that it showed up again recently when Mark Sims' wife noticed it, because this is the time that we need to understand this deeper concept of disclosure. So, folks, thanks for being with us, and I'll probably be with you for a few minutes after we show that video. But if you've already seen the video and you're not going to watch, happy Halloween to everybody. Okay, now I'm going to show the video that was made in 2012 with Mark Sims at his Harmonic Convergence show. It was done live, and I don't recall seeing it. I don't think I saw it. I mean, I wasn't shown the video. I didn't see it while it was being made either. Neither one of us could actually see the video being made because of the way the system was set up. I don't think it was put online. And if it was put online or anyone can find an old version of it that doesn't have this in it, that would be fascinating. In any case, what it is this white material that comes over my face. And a lot of people immediately dismiss it as a video artifact. But that's now been analyzed very thoroughly, and it's not a video artifact of any known form. The reason being that it clings to my face. It's some kind of a charge that affects the camera, but it's coming off of me, off of my face. And when I touch my face right at the end, it immediately disappears. So it's an electronic something or other, a field of some kind. I think its purpose might be to draw attention to what is being said. I think that because what I'm talking about back in 2012 is disclosure, but I'm talking about it in a very different way than we usually talk about it. We all sit passively waiting for the government to do something about it. What I'm talking about is another kind of disclosure, which is within oneself, opening oneself in a new way. And maybe that's what's needed. And the reason I think that is we have, Chris Bledsoe thinks something will happen next Easter, and maybe it will. Whether it has to do with disclosure or not is not clear. People say something will happen in 2027. But as far as the government disclosing something officially, the president sitting down and saying there are aliens among us or something, I have my doubts. I have my doubts because of a couple of things. First, the abductions. I don't think that the government can afford to admit that they're real. In fact, if you talk too much about them on any show, Google drops a disclaimer on your show saying basically that they're not real from the ever accurate, he laughed, Wikipedia. In any case, there's a great deal of official denial, and as always, the big tech companies follow the official line. Just slavishly, because they're just extensions after all of the official world at this point. The other possibility of them being unwilling to disclose has to do with patents. I think there are a lot of patents on materials that have been gathered from crash sites and so forth. These materials were already fabricated when they were patented. They weren't fabricated by the people who patented them. So they're not valid patents. Whoever fabricated them has the right to patent them. The other problem with the patents is there were most favored nation status to certain defense companies, and the materials were given only to certain companies. They weren't bid out at all, as far as I can tell, and certainly not in any public bidding procedure, with the result that if that is the case, the law was violated. They should have been bid out to all comers who had agency in the various areas that were relevant, and apparently that didn't happen. So the defense industry is going to be saying to the Defense Department, don't do this, don't reveal these materials, because our patents will be destroyed, we'll be sued massively. So I think that kind of pushback is going to be very powerful and very convincing. There are probably other reasons as well. We're supposed to trust our government, but I mean, that is so far in the past, I can't believe anyone really cares about that. This is, if you don't know how to lie, you can't be part of the government at this point, at least not of the Defense Department. And it's a horrible situation that this subject, more than anything, has corrupted the relationship between the people and their government. This has been incredibly destructive. Amazing. Okay, so those are some of the reasons. I would be surprised if there's any official moment of disclosure where the president or somebody says, we do have materials that we know to be from another world, or we have alien bodies and so forth. If that happens, fine. This is another vision of disclosure. Listen closely. It has to do with you. And afterwards, I'm just going to fade out. I'm not going to say anything more. So I would like to add Happy Halloween from unknowncountry.com and me in Dreamland. I know we have a little unusual approach to Halloween, but that's okay. It's All Saints Day and All Souls Day and the day when the veil between the worlds is thinnest by tradition. And that's what I'm all about, is thinning that veil, because when that veil is thinnest is when we will find the visitors, our own dead, and our own true selves.
What does disclosure mean to you, Whitley?
Disclosure means to me that you find a new place in yourself that has always been there and that you did not believe was actually there. Because when you truly come into touch with yourself and you find that place of peace and silence within you, then you will also find this whole array of entity around you and also inside you, that it permeates the world. It includes the visitors as we know them. It includes our dead, because the visitors don't have the barrier between the living and the dead. They've been here, but they're not there here now. They're beyond here. And I don't live with that barrier anymore either, and you don't have to. You don't need to, but it's a very much of an inner outer process. Consciousness, in a sense, is contact. And the more you build your consciousness, that is to say, the more you find that peace that lies behind your name, your ego, and all of the outer stuff about you, there's someone else there. That someone does not have a name, that someone is who projected you into this world. And when your consciousness reaches back into that level, it also reaches into the level where the visitors live. And to me, that's what matters about disclosure. I know a lot of the secrets that the government keeps, and they're, most of them are pretty scary, frankly. And they, of course, they keep these secrets because they're afraid. And they were made to do that because the visitors, as I said earlier, do not want us to accidentally trip over ourselves, discover them, and sort of self-colonize. In other words, they do not want to colonize us, even if we are the ones who open the door. See what I mean?
Yes, I do.
So, you know, if you reach to the point where you are beyond that, and you will not be colonized when you encounter them, you will encounter them, but it's very hard to find that level of yourself, because we live in our personalities. But the frank truth is, you were given a name when you were a little child, and that name began to have all kinds of personalities attached to it. A brain is a big deal, and there's trillions of different relationships in there. It's like being in a beautiful maze that is so familiar to you, you can race around in it like it was belonged to you, but it's actually just part of your biology. Of course, the ego fears death because it does die. It dies when the brain dies. But the other part does not die. It is always at peace, and no matter how terrible your life situation, how dreadful a person you have been, any of that, inside, behind it all, is this place of peace. And as I say, that's where you will find those who have loved you in this life and passed on. And you will find also the visitors there.
That's right. So one of the things I have come to believe, and this hypothesis or theory is through my study, with reading books on this subject matter and also talking directly to elders that I've met, indigenous elders, and watching them on this program. But it's clear to me that part of the phenomenon that we call the ET / UFO phenomenon is involving our ancestors, literally those that we loved that have passed on.
Absolutely.
And so this orb phenomenon that many people speak about, where a light will be floating around a room or around the house and interact with you or with the dog. I've seen films of this.
Well, with the dog and the cats.
Right. And everybody's happy, and especially the dog and the cat. They get excited with it. And you can see that this is not CGI'd or special effects.
Right.
The dogs and the cats are responding to the ball of light and being playful and really happy. And the family is in the living room, and they're watching these balls of light floating around the room very playfully. And they're just overjoyed. And they don't know who or what these orbs are. They're just filled with so much excitement and happiness and joy. And it's clear to me from observing it that these are visitors, the so-called visitors, are relatives. These are loved ones that are able to manifest as an orb of light and interact.
Well, I can tell you a couple of stories about orbs. The first one is this. When I was in, it was back in the 70s, I was in a church. It was my grandmother's funeral. My grandmother she died at, I believe, about 86. Her mother had lived until 106, and she was absolutely convinced she would not die until she was in her hundreds. And then she did die, and the funeral was taking place, and I was totally outside of this world. I was still living in the secular world completely at that point. And I'm in the church, and the coffin is there, and the service is going on, and all of a sudden, six orbs, big things, about this big around, show up, and they line up on both sides of the coffin. They come in, and they move so perfectly. They weren't floating at all. They were moving on their own. And I almost shouted. I mean, I assumed everyone in the church saw them. And then moment later, I realized I was the only person who saw them. And I got a communication. It was very clear. They were there because they were her cadre or something. But she was the seventh member of this group. And they were there because she did not believe she was dead, and she was still in the corpse. And they were trying to get her out. Get out of the corpse. And I thought, oh my God, what a thing to see. I must be nuts. But then as I developed in this and learned more, it became a journey. It took 6 years to get her to face the fact that she actually was dead. And then when the second she faced it, we were face to face when it happened. She in the other world and me in this one. I could see the realization come over her face, the acceptance, and her eyes turned to gold, and she was gone.
Wow. That's beautiful.
Second story is a little different. This happened in the cabin in upstate New York back in the early 90s. And I had a room upstairs where I meditated. And one night, there were seven thuds on the roof of the cabin, above the loud. And I'm sitting there thinking, is it coons? I mean, it seemed very weird. I mean, where would they come from? It couldn't be buzzards. There were no buzzards up there, and it was night anyway. And then the next thing I realized, there's someone standing in front of me that I could not see. And we, at this point in the cabin, that was no surprise. We had plenty of invisibles coming in and out all the time. The animals were eloquent proof of that, their reactions, because they did see him. So I'm sitting there trying to meditate, and I finally say, okay, look, I'm sorry, but I'm just not developed enough spiritually to meditate with someone I can't see who's right in front of me. So unless I can see you, I'm going to bed. Nothing happened, so I went to bed. Then in the middle of the night, bang, bang, someone punches me on the shoulder, and I wake right up, because this is the way the visitors would wake me up at that point all the time. And there, sitting on the foot of the bed, is a man. Not, he was like a man. I would say he was about 5 feet tall, and he was just sitting there. And I think to myself, am I dreaming? Nope. I am going to check this out, because if he's still down there when I slide down to the foot of the bed, I'll know I'm not dreaming. So I slide down to the foot of the bed, and I look right at him. I'm like looking at him in the face, you know, where I'm in his face. And he's got these very dark eyes, but he looks totally human. So I think, can I touch him? And I reach over, and I pick up his hand. His hand is about half the size of mine. It's lying in my hand. It has heft and weight. So I smell his skin. And boy, I think to myself, not only is he real, this guy has not bathed in a long time. And that started a relationship with a group of dead people who were capable of materializing at times with tremendous concentration. These were advanced souls, obviously. Then we lost the cabin. And the last night, I'm meditating with them. They have not been physically there for a while. And I say, okay, this is it. We will never meditate together in this room again. And I just want to see one last time what you actually look like. Nothing happens. I go back to bed. I lie down in the bed. And in a few seconds, I see this light in the front yard, out the front windows of the bedroom. And at first, I think the house is on fire. And I think, you know, actually, that could be good, because we might save the house with the insurance money. So I rush to the window, and there, coming out of the room, is the most loveliest orb. It was just pure, bright white light with rays like lasers off of it, coming off of it in every direction. And as some of them touched me, there would be a little pricking as they slipped through my body, and I could feel and taste the essence of another human being. And so that's what we are.
Yeah.
It's what we are. We are those orbs.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's exactly right.
Thank you for listening. Dreamland is brought to you by Unknown Country and its family of subscribers. Our news editor is Matthew Frizzell. Our site coordinator is Amy Safrankova. The founder of UnknownCountry.com is Ann Strieber. I'm Whitley Strieber, your host for Dreamland.